Today I talk a bit about spirituality and environment. And some of you might think, oh, what's the connection about it? And it's quite interesting because environment and spirituality are very closely interconnected. As Frank mentioned, we're going since many, many years to the United Nations Climate Conference. We're going since many, many years to the UN Climate Conference, and you all might know that. Can I have a normal? I can speak. You will adjust. Okay. All right.
This sounds to be better. All right. So first of all, I give you some information about the climate, because wherever you come from, you might have had some strange weather at your home place, and. The latest science from the climate research is not very good. So in the environment, there are many different areas of research. One is climate, one is biodiversity, one is about oceans, one is about planetary boundaries. This is a slide about the planetary boundaries, which is very, very important because it's dealing with the environment in total, what's going on in the planet. And this is recently published just about a month ago in the Nature magazine. It's peer-reviewed. And basically what they say, they identified 8 different areas which are very important for the operation of humanity on this planet. These are called the planetary boundaries. Oh, I should translate slower, I remember. And so the bad news is that in 7 out of 8 areas, we are out of the safe operating space. It means we are using too much groundwater, we're distributing too much nitrogen in the soil, too much phosphorus, we're polluting the air, climate change is getting out of control, natural ecosystem is under stress, and surface water is also being polluted. These are the major areas which control our future on planet, and in 7 out of 8 areas, we are out of the safe operating space. And here you see another very interesting slide. It's about the tipping points in climate. So science a couple of years ago has identified all the important players which control the climate. And very important, for example, is the jet stream. Jet streams are about 8 major streams around the globe. And the pilot, when you fly to India, the pilot always try to fly with the jet stream because they're up to 200 kilometers fast. And these jet streams, they control high pressure and low pressure systems, and they have shifted. Because temperature has gone up 1.2 degree on an average since the baseline, which is 1950. And so these jet streams have changed. And because they have changed, we get high pressure system and we get low pressure system for a long time, and they don't move. This is why we get drought for 3 months, or we get heavy rains for 2 months and flooding. And because of all these changes, the ice sheets in blue are under stress and melting at very high speed. You know that soon in summer, Arctic sea ice will be gone. And the shipping companies are happy, but all the animals living there in the north are very unhappy because their livelihood is being destroyed. Similar also, the circulation systems, basically the Atlantic circulation, El Nino circulation, Indian's monsoon and African monsoon, they have begun to shift. And lastly, the biosphere components, this is the tropical coral reefs, the forests, and the Amazon rainforest, and so on, they are under severe stress. You might have heard in Canada, we had this summer, 2,000 forest fires. So very dramatic situation in the environment. And they say that out of 12 tipping points, 8 are moving, you know. So 8 systems are moving out of balance. And they are also all interconnected. If one system moves, it is shifting the other one. Science is working a lot on these predictions. They have supercomputers running around the world. And we visit every year once some research institutes and have a chat with the scientists and get a bit latest update what's going on. And interestingly, there is this connection between the historical emissions of CO2 and what's going on right now, and that's all about climate justice. And here you see, for example, who's responsible for the emissions of CO2 and who's responsible since 1750 actually for climate change. And you can see the biggest emitter is United States of America. They're responsible for 25% of the CO2 emissions globally. And country like India is responsible for 3% of the emissions. So rightly, the Indian government is always pointing out at the climate conference, hey, you rich countries in the West, you are responsible for the climate change. Please give us technology and please pay, please transfer funds so we can adapt. And of course, the West is stalling as much as possible. This discussion is about climate justice is also going on as old as the United Nations Climate Conference since almost 25 years. This discussion is going on. So there is a injustice also in the whole climate problematic. Yeah, so what is in the pipeline? Pipeline is black. Here it comes. So we will have more droughts, we have more rains, we have rivers falling dry, and we have floodings, serious floodings. You might have heard this September in Europe was the hottest September on record. In Brazil is the hottest spring on record. And in Australia, there was no winter at all. That's what I heard. And I'm sure wherever you live, you can feel the changes, the effect of climate change. Am I right? You can feel? Yeah. So it's actually affecting us already, affecting farmers, affecting the crop and the yield. And India has stopped export of wheat and rice because the harvest was not good. And India is the second largest rice and wheat exporter in the world. So you can imagine the effects on the rest of the world. And I just spoke to a friend this morning who is in wholesale, and he says all the pulses in India, all the wheats, rice, almost doubled this year. Can you imagine for the poor people, you know, what climate change already practical means for farmers and for the food security? So, Sir David Attenborough, a very famous BBC filmmaker, he said, the collapse of civilization might be on the horizon. So it's a very dramatic time we're inside, and you are coming right time to Brahma Kumaris, to Mount Abu, to this place here of transformation. Because the world is in fast transformation, and if we look outside, we read the news on environment, we can see there's a lot of fast changes going on, and this is the connection between spirituality and environment. So despite all this difficult situation, we have to stay very optimistic. And I think that you're also learning here to be optimistic. And you see we have this elephant and this monkey, and both are very, very optimistic. Because monkey is thinking he can catch the elephant, and elephant is in midair and thinks monkey can hold me. And this should be our mindset. Despite this news, we should stay optimistic. Why is that so? I will elaborate a little bit later. Because of all these issues, Brahma Kumaris has initiated an environmental initiative. And about 15, 16 years ago, 2009, when the climate conference came to Copenhagen, our sister Sonja, which is sitting here. Sonja, can you get up? Sonja is the secretary and manager and the heart and soul of the climate initiative. And since 15 years, organizes all these programs and activities, the web page and all these kind of things. And Sister Valerian is also a member of Green Team, and Valerian is not here, but you know her, she's part of the team. And Sister Jandy, who will come a little bit later, is also part of the environmental team. And we have set up this environmental team, and you can see our web page, you can find lots of information. Climate emergency, healthy green lifestyle, cool people for a warm planet. And we are promoting there an inner change. Live simple, be positive, follow your dream, open your heart, eat well, feed the soul, empower yourself, respect life, be unlimited, and so on. And we go to the centers and we try to bring them closer to a green lifestyle. So we raise the awareness in centers about climate change, lifestyle. How is my personal life having an impact onto my carbon footprint and thus also to the environment. We do campaigns. We have a plastic-free campaign within the institution, and those who have tried to eradicate plastic at your home, you might know how difficult it is to get free of plastic. It's almost impossible. We do travel compensation so people can donate money for their carbon emissions from the flights when they come. We have guidelines for the centers, collect rubbish, do this, do that, you know, in order to reduce carbon footprint. And we have an assessment certificate, and we monitor, and we have regular newspaper in our green initiative. We also try to inspire people on the five R's. Rethink before you do anything. What's the impact into the environment, you know? When I drive with a car, can I go by train or can I go together with other people? Reuse as much as possible. Reduce your consumption as much as you like and recycle as much and refuse to follow all the trends. So these are the five R's, and we try to inspire our members but also people to come here to think about their lifestyle and their impact into climate. Because if we all change, small changes, they make the big change. We also advocate a vegetarian or vegan diet, because here you can see from the statistics, all meat has an incredible high carbon footprint, incredible high water consumption, incredible high land consumption, and fertilizer consumption. So pulses, wheat, rice, these are the good food. This is the good food, and animals are not really happy if we slaughter them and eat them. It's very unethical how we keep these animals. And Earth will be very, very happy if we go all vegetarian or even better, vegan. And I hope those who are not yet there, they will be inspired staying here at least once, twice, thrice a week, have a meat-free day. We also go regular to the United Nations climate conferences. Therefore, we had to accredit ourselves with the UN, which is a quite elaborate process. And we have the right to participate, ask questions, make press conferences and programs inside, and we can even make petitions to the conference secretariat. So we are an active member in the climate conference since 2009. And interestingly, when we came first time, people were laughing a little bit on us. They said, oh, what are these funny yogis doing here in white dress and all this? And we have the money, we have the technology, and we have strategy, and we fixed the climate project problem. This was 15 years ago. Meanwhile, the same people come to us and they say, ooh, I have a burnout, I'm frustrated, nothing is happening. Please teach me meditation for peace of mind. That's how things have changed. And we are very active at the climate conference. We are very active in the interfaith, interreligious dialogue. We actually are one of the founder organizations of interreligious dialogue for climate change. Now, Vatican has a green ambassador, has a green Laudato Si, has a green encyclopedia or whatever. We have press conference within, we have a stand, raise awareness. We have 20 to 25 programs inside and outside the COP. The next climate conference is in Dubai, and we are planning for a live studio, inviting people and have meaningful panel discussions with them, wisdom, care and share from Dubai, and we will share with all of you also the link once it is done. And in the meantime, Brahma Kumaris has accredited further to other UN organizations, and we participate at UN Water Conference, the Convention on Biodiversity, last one was in Montreal. We go to the United Nations Environment Program conferences in Nairobi. We participate the Ocean Conference and combat desertification and for food system. Because all these systems are affected now by climate change. Everything is affected, everything is interconnected. So we have a large team, at least 20 people, and they go to all these different UN conferences trying to raise the awareness and make people aware of the connection between your thoughts, your emotions, your feelings, and your actions. And in order to bring a lasting change, you have to change on the inside. That's our main message at the climate conference. We also have a tree plantation program which we launched 3 years ago, 2 years ago. It's called Kalptaru, and we have planted so far almost 2 million trees worldwide. There's a webpage. You can go there. You can go there and you can plant a tree, and then you take a photo and you click on the app and you say, I've planted a tree, and then it's counted. So it's a very modern tree plantation campaign. But we are reaching out and we're trying to greenify Mount Abu. I'm doing this since last 30 years, and believe me, it's not easy. You plant 500 trees and 480 trees are eaten by the goats and by the cows. And you can be lucky if something survives, and you have to water it. Yeah, so Brahma Kumaris is also very active in the field of renewable energy, and we are a recognized research organization. We started more than 25, almost 30 years ago, we started into research and development of renewable energy systems, and we do research in photovoltaic, solar steam cooking, water recycling, hot water, architecture, thermal power, and energy efficiency. And we do research projects with the German government, Indian government, Australian government, make research papers, invite engineers, make seminars. That's going on since 25 years. And here you see a nostalgic picture. This is our Gyan Sarovar. This is the dining hall you are eating underneath. Down here you are eating. And this is our solar cooker, which we installed in 1997, which was working 24 years flawless. And unfortunately, a close inspection 6 months ago revealed that it was rotten to the core. And steam pipes and steel structures, 25 years in this climate. So we had to demolish it. So now if you come up on the rooftop, it's all empty. But therefore, we're installing a new solar cooker, which will be based on... technology. Delay. Which will be based on photovoltaic. We install 150 kilowatt photovoltaic, and then we probably introduce induction cooking. It's not yet final. So, and here on the back side of the hall, you can see our solar installation. We have installed right now in Gyan Sarovar 400 kilowatt. This is approximately one third of the load of the campus. So, all this power for the sound, emergency light for the kitchen, evening street light, meditation rooms, computers, all critical load is running already on solar power. So, we're trying slowly to roll over and install more and more and go 100%. But of course, funds are required. It's always a costly affair, especially if you store the energy. We also promote the solar cooking box, and we have sold 5,000 of these cooking boxes. Very nice, very good. And we also promote the solar lantern. And we have distributed more than 20,000 of these lanterns also in the local community, because India still faces a lot of power cuts, and 60,000 villages in India are without proper electric connection. And here in the remote areas, if you go Mount Abu in the remote areas, many huts and small houses, they don't have a connection. So this is very good. And most of the work we have done ourselves. And here you can see our Om Shanti Retreat Center installation of solar plates. And here you can see a 400 kilowatt power plant, and here solar steam cooking system. And here you can see our Shantivan complex. Now we're going down the plains, to the plains. And you can see here is a solar steam cooking system. And here we have installed totally 300 kilowatt of photovoltaic, and produce also power there. We've installed also a solar steam cooking system, which you can see here in 1999. And this is built out of 84 parabolic dishes, and we produce 3,500 kilograms steam, and we generate energy for 35,000 meals a day. So all the work and installation design was all done in-house by our own engineering team, and we sent steam into the kitchen, and we can cook in these vessels rice, dal, vegetables and so on. And tomorrow you will have also a tour, and if everything runs nicely, you will also see our big hall. And this is our hall when it's full, and we have what is called a mela. It's called a gathering, and we have meetings of up to 20,000 people at a time. So it's quite a big thing to cook for these people, and using solar energy also. Yeah, I would like to share one of our last big projects. This is called India One, and tomorrow you all will visit the power station. It's a 10 million euro project and was sponsored by the German government, the Indian government and the Brahma Kumaris. And the speciality is a thermal power plant with storage. Storage, you know, to store the energy is the big crucial problem in renewable energies. Storage is costly. Sometimes solar energy is in daytime, and you have to sort of supply power in the night, so you need storage. So everybody's doing research in storage, and this project has solved this problem. This is the prototype 15 years ago. Here we are, the three inventors, and we have a 60 square meter dish, concentrate the sunlight on a receiver. We can achieve 1,500 centigrades in the receiver, and the receiver is made out of 3 tons of cast iron, and we heat up the receiver to 500 centigrades maximum, and then we pump water through a coil, and we get superheated steam. And here you can see the first prototype being installed. This was the third version, and then we installed many of these dishes. Each dish is in-house manufactured. It consists out of 600 parts and has 4 little motors to move it like a sunflower and follow the sun. Each dish has a computer, each dish has a camera, and each dish is connected via network to a control room. And we installed totally 770 dishes, you can see here. And they produce steam and energy, and as we can store it, we supply steam 24 hours to the turbine house. And in the turbine house we have a 1 megawatt Siemens turbine, which can produce 24 hours electricity. This project is now running since 6 years, and the only drawback is we need good sunshine. But luckily, Rajasthan is the desert state of India, and we're supposed to have full sunshine except rainy season. But also, due to climate change, cloud cover in Rajasthan is increasing. It's quite interesting. And rainy season just left us. So everything is also changing here. So tomorrow you will see this plant, and you will get a real impression of the size and magnitude. Now we're putting up a biogas plant, and we're doing some more research projects there. Also, waste management. We're introducing now segregating the waste and then recycle it in the biogas plant and so on. So all these kind of ideas are there and efforts are there. And Brahma Kumaris is a real inspiration to the region, but also to the country. And all the visitors who are coming to our place, they can see these systems and get some inspiration so they can do something also at their own institution or place. We also train local people and do a lot of workshops and seminars. We have done more than 50 seminars with UNEP together, United Nations Environment Program, and we train engineers and on these new technologies and try to inspire them to replicate. We also look after the workers, qualify them, and so on. So a lot of activities are going on in the renewable energy, and we're about 60 people within the Brahma Kumaris here in our headquarters who are working on solar energy. Yeah, so much to that topic. As time is short, I'm stopping here. I can endlessly give you new photos and information about it, but you get an idea. A lot of things have been done. We also have another project going on since the last 10 years. It's called Sustainable Yogic Farming. And that's a very innovative project where we inspire farmers in India to meditate. Love and compassion towards the land, love and compassion and good intent towards the seed and the crops. And we teach them to meditate in the morning 15 minutes and in the evening 15 minutes with the seeds. And then the results are very amazing. For example, here you see a result of our carrot plantation. You can see, first of all, the farmer becomes more happy because he's meditating. And secondly, the yogic carrots are the biggest and the most tasty. You can see, these are organic, a little smaller, and these are with chemical fertilizer. And we even meditate and tell no bugs should go in, you should grow with less water, and everything should be all right. And they're growing. They follow your thoughts. Isn't that interesting? We've done this also with wheat, and you can see wheat with meditation, wheat without meditation. And interesting, the results are so interesting and astonishingly also, they're so clear also, that we contacted the Indian Ministry of Agriculture, and we have worked with the university and scientifically examined all these activities and projects. And now we identify 80 model farms in India where we apply yogic farming, and we work out a program also with the Indian Ministry of Agriculture to introduce yogic farming on a large scale. You have more output, your wheat or rice is more resilient, and you don't need fertilizer, and you don't have pesticides. Isn't that interesting? And this just by your thoughts. And I can imagine you have plants at home, and most of you are talking to the plants. Am I right? Huh? And, you know, that's how it works. So, clever person like Leonardo da Vinci, he said, realize that everything connects to everything else. Isn't that interesting? Everything is connected to everything else. And one of the deep secrets in spirituality is that our mind and matter are entangled. In spirituality, we say that this world here around us is a reflection of the state of our mind. I'm peaceful, we are all peaceful, the world is peaceful. I'm pure, we are all pure on the inside, the world is a pure one. Because we create all the time an energy field. And this energy field vibration, it's called, it radiates out. And it touches matter. We're talking all the time to physical reality. And this is what quantum physics is telling us, that the state of our mind has an impact in the outcome of many experiments. Has been proven also in science over many years. So, our thoughts and visions create reality. Very closely connected. This is why it is so important that we learn how to create positive and loving, compassionate thoughts. So big question is now how to heal ourselves, become peaceful, loving, compassionate on the long run. To be here in Mount Abu peaceful is not so complicated, but when you come back into your normal environment, the real challenge is starting. So I would like to introduce to you our Dadi Janki. She's the former head of the Brahma Kumaris and was a real beacon of light and inspiration. She died 3 years ago, 4 years, 3 years ago, in the midst of Corona. She was 103 years, traveled all over the world, and normally she would be here, Elsa, at the peace of mind. And she was an inspiration, and these were the Dadis who were sort of administrating the Brahma Kumaris, and they were also wholeheartedly always promoting renewable energies. When I came 20 years ago and I said, I need a little bit money, a little bit land, they said, yes, yes, good idea, go ahead. So women should run the show because they are more inclined. And you know the name Brahma Kumaris? Kumaris is the daughters of Brahma. It's not Kumars, the brothers. It's the daughters of Brahma. And I think 60-70% of the institution is a share of women. So we are basically a women's organization, which makes it very lovely and very sweet. So, Dadi was an inspiration, and she always said, be a helper to God, be loving and compassionate, be a healer for the world, and be a guide to the light. Become an angel. And she said the method to become and to change is meditation. And meditation is a topic which has been also researched over the last 30, 40 years. And the scientific evidence about the benefits of meditation is actually overwhelming. If you meditate regular, it increases your social competence. You love yourself, you love the world. And what you love, you don't destroy. It's very easy. It also deepens relaxation and improves your health. This is also one of the benefits of regular meditation. But now it's getting very interesting. It increases brain cells and activities. There's something in our brain called the neuronal flexibility. This is our ability to adopt new ideas and to change. Normally when you become older, the flexibility of your brain is decreasing. But if you meditate regularly, something wonderful happens. The flexibility comes back. You're open to change. When you meditate regularly, it changes habits and awareness. And that's what the world needs. We have to become peaceful, we have to become loving, we have to become compassionate, we have to become pure. And meditation is the most powerful tool to change habits. Yeah, and in order to inspire people a bit, we have created a platform called Yogis for Future. We have 150 meditation commentaries there. There's a web page you can go on, there's a little app. And in the morning you can click and listen 5-8 minutes for meditation. And the mind is set for the rest of the day. You will be on cloud 7 and everything will be all right because you have done a meditation in the morning. Yeah, so it's also of course free and you just can have a look there. So what is left for us is actually to use the power of our imagination, because all of us, we are very, very powerful. And that's the link between environment and spirituality. If we understand that we are all very special creators, that we have a very creative potential in us, and that our mind and our thoughts are actually shaping reality, that we're all the time talking to the world outside there, we become aware if we start loving and compassionate imaginations, the world will start to change because we change vibration. And the plants are reacting, other people are reacting to vibration, but matter is also reacting to shift in vibration. And you know, there was this beautiful song of John Lennon, "Imagine all the people living, da da da." You know the song? I hope you know it. Very lovely song. So, what we have to do is, we should imagine a beautiful world. And you know, the most important emotion, feeling is love. Love for God, for the divine, love for purity, love for the self, and love for others. And they say if you have love, you can make wonders and you can change everything. And where there is love, everything becomes easy. No? So when there is love, there comes harmony, there comes peace, and there comes beauty. You know, when I came here, this land was very barren and brown. And all the trees were like this because people were cutting, animals were this and that. It was a barren land. And we transformed it with a lot of love into a little paradise. And this is what you can do. It's not only the physical work, it's also the vibration and the energy which goes in, which is actually more important in the transformation. And then comes perfection, purity, bliss, happiness, prosperity, timelessness and justice. And we won't have no internet in paradise and no mobile phones. Wouldn't that be nice? It will be the real deal, real life, without internet. So, what we have to do is we all have to join hands. And this seminar here, this peace of mind, is one of our ways to reach out into society, build a bridge, and inspire everybody who comes here to this place to sort of understand the spiritual laws of as it is on the inside, so it is on the outside. Whatever happens in the world around me, it's a mirror of our collective consciousness. And once we understand, we start regular meditating, we connect to the divine light, to the supreme being, inner transformation happens. I get rid of those little nasty negativities which are bothering me sometimes. I become peaceful. I become compassionate. And I change the vibrational field in my own inner aura. And once I change the vibration inside myself, I start radiating love and compassion to the outside world. I inspire other people. I inspire nature. And I inspire the world. And that's how we all will become change makers. And we all become aware about our incredible potential, which we all have all the time, to bring change to this world and to bring change to this environment, which is in a very difficult situation right now. So most important is to have this positive outlook, have faith in the future that everything will transform towards the good, towards the light. You know, Brahma Kumaris has this idea that we're in a transition towards a new golden age, and that the power of our mind plays the key role. And you come to this place here to learn this and to be inspired. And I hope this little journey on the environment, on the connection between spirituality and environment, has sort of sharpened your understanding for the connection, for your own responsibility, but also for your power, which we all possess. We're not helpless. We are change makers. And we can inspire the whole world. And that's what we yogis are going to do, trying to be a lighthouse and a mighthouse of power and inspiration to the world. So we have these web pages, echobrahmakumaris.org. You will find interviews, links to our solar, workshops, PowerPoints, seminars on all various topics. Yogis for Future, Brahma Kumaris, Solar, and our main web pages. And please feel free to have a look. And after some days, maybe, we will, Sonia and myself, and maybe Valerian, we will announce a little meeting of those who are a bit more interested in the environment to meet us and have a little chit-chat. And we will try to find a time in between when you're free. And I thank you very, very much for your attention. And I hope you are sufficiently inspired tomorrow to go to Shantivan, see with your own eyes the huge India One solar power plant. You will get nice drinks there, I can promise. It's a big, beautiful garden also there. The big hall. And that you don't miss that chance. And I promise to be spot on 6 o'clock ready. And herewith I hand over to Frank. Thank you very much.